Hello and welcome to season 3 of The Road Provides, a travel podcast for the next generation of travelers, adventurers, and vagabonds. I'm your host, Bradford Clements. Joining me as always is my co-host in Denver, Nate Sundermeyer, aka the Frank Ocean of subway stations. This week, we're time traveling back to the cradle of civilization, cruising down the Nile, eating mangoes with our guest in Cairo, DJ Amin Ra. So put on your Beats by Dre headphones, hashtag not an ad, and buckle in. This is The Road Provides.
Talking about the pyramids. Talking about the pyramids tonight, ho.
Is that too much?
Again, welcome everybody to episode 6 of season 3. This is our penultimate. Is that the proper?
Yeah. One more.
This is our penultimate episode. I've got my sunglasses on in a closet, in a dark closet. Nate's sitting in a condo in a mountain town. And where are you?
I'm in Keystone, and this is probably the most well-lit my face has ever been. You probably forgot what I really looked like.
You could use a tan, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's fair.
I'm glad I got my sunglasses on.
I'm in Keystone. It is it's sunny. I'm looking out at the mountains. There's a field with a bunch of prairie dogs. It is it closed last week, or 10 days ago, so it is pretty much dead here. So it feels like the perfect place to get into a podcast, you know, the tortured soul off season, you're alone in a mountain town. That's very, I feel like, artistic. And I think that's a good place to have a lot of creative expression. Yeah, it's basically your life, Brad.
We're in shoulder season, dead season here in Montana, and it is ghost town status. Mm-hmm. It feels great. It's not a great time to make money or earn money. But I keep reminding myself and other people like, hey, like in 2 months, it's going to be absolute bonkers here. And we're all going to be bitching about the number of tourists and how the traffic sucks and everything.
Enjoy the quiet while you can, yeah.
Trying to sip in the quiet and all that jazz. Big
can
news
we mention
week,
that it's also 420?
It is 420. Nate was like, I was like, when are we going to record? Or he was like, when are we going to record? I was like, I don't know. What are you thinking? He's like, well, you know, I'm trying to partake in some 420 activities.
I'm trying to 420 blaze it, Brad.
And I was like, it's 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
And I was like, what are you doing? He's like, yeah, you know, just I'm in here in a condo by myself. You know, I just wanted to watch a movie. I was like, all right, fair enough.
It was a real testament of I'm not the biggest 420 guy, but if I was, it'd be a big testament because I at 420 on 420, I was hanging out with sunglass closet Brad over here. So
wait, can we?
Yeah. Before
we get going, there's big travel news this week.
Are you talking about the planes and the masks?
I'm talking maskless plane travel.
I don't know how I feel about that.
Tell me. You have to pick a side.
I think there's something comforting thinking about like...
Nature's returning.
I mean, I hate it. But I think at the same time,
We're all going to go back to getting the flu the old-fashioned way.
Yeah.
You know, on metros and subways and airplanes, everybody's just going to go back to passing germs. And
COVID's not gone, though.
It's not. And it's just going to be like roulette. It's going to be like the roulette wheel. It's just like, what row are you in on what plane? And yeah, sure. I mean, I still actively know people at least once a week. Somebody's on Instagram or something, or somebody in town's like, I got it. So yeah, I mean, it's here now. But apparently, who struck it down? I didn't read too much of I'm kind of over the whole politics of all this. But what court?
Like, I didn't hear about this until I was talking to you today. So.
Oh, really?
I don't have any flights anytime soon, but I think I'm still going to wear a mask.
Really?
Wow. Here I go, standing up.
There you go. Stand for your rights.
Yeah.
You know, when I knew it was all over is when I walked into the health food market here in town and like those women stopped wearing masks. They were the last bastions of mask wearing and social responsibility. When I walked into the health food store, you know what I'm talking about? Like that hippie health food store with all like the local stuff. You
walk in there and it's, or whatever, yeah.
Yeah. And it smells like,
candles,
fresh herbs and candles and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. When they stopped wearing masks, I was like, all right, we're good. We're good.
COVID's over. Yeah.
Well, anyway, I thought we'd share that and mention it. Let me pick a side. I can't stand wearing masks on plane. Luckily, I won't be flying for the next 5-6 months anyway. But I don't think I would wear a mask on a plane. Unless I was going to see my dad, then I would absolutely. And see, that's when it all gets all fucking muddy waters.
Yeah, then you're like, oh, but you're not, you know, you're not going to wear your mask when you're seeing your aunt or your
or somebody else's. What if somebody else's dad or whatever? Yeah, that's when it gets really gnarly. I hate flying with a fucking mask on. So yeah, we're just going to leave that there. We're not going to wade into that anymore.
Yeah, this isn't a political podcast. All right, well, let's get
take
into
us
it.
To the promised land.
So as you know, I'm sure you see here in Shoulder Season 2, temps are rising here in Colorado, snow's melting, no one's on the slopes, people are looking for it, and we're going to keep the temperature rising. It's our travel takes, anything spicy that pertains to travel in any shape or form. What spicy take do you have for me this week, Brad?
It's 420, as you said. Jobless! My travel take today is thus appropriate. And it is, don't buy drugs on the road and largely avoid them altogether.
Interesting.
I call this the don't feed the bears principle. Nate, have you seen those old photos or videos of Yellowstone back in the 1960s?
Yeah, sick.
Where there's like a family of four in a car, dad's hanging out the driver's side door, hand feeding a grizzly.
Yeah.
You've seen those? Bonkers. Absolutely bonkers. Part of me is like, I want to have that experience. And the thing was, is nobody knew any better, right? But it created a huge problem. Of course, now they know you can't be going around feeding grizzlies, you know what I mean? With kids around and like people sleeping in campsites and shit like that. I'd also ask you, Nate, you're a real estate agent. Does anybody want to buy property where people sell drugs?
No. I mean, weed's legal here, but like the hardcore drug, crack, meth, no.
Even if you were in a neighborhood and they were like just a bunch of 20-year-olds smoking weed all the time, people coming through buying drugs off them, that doesn't sound like a place where anybody wants to spend $750,000 on the house, does it?
Definitely not.
No. Now, I love drugs, but my question is, why is everybody ripping around Europe, Latin America, Southeast Asia, just getting absolutely smashed on drugs and everything under the sun? What it all comes down to me is I just hate seeing what this does to the communities abroad. Mm. I've seen 10-year-olds selling weed and or other substances to drunk Westerners, and it's a sickness in my stomach I'll never forget. And it's just as simple as that. You don't want to live in that here in the U.S. You wouldn't ever live or want to live necessarily or stay, frequent a place that was just overrun by kids selling drugs, people selling drugs.
Yeah,
people like doing drugs out in public. So why create that where you travel? That's it. Happy 420, everybody. Get out there, get high.
Yeah, I'm with you on this. I think especially you think about areas, especially if you look at, I haven't mentioned Bali at all this season. So I'm thinking about Bali where you have like the, right off the airport, Denpasar, Kuta, Seminyak, there's people harassing you for drugs and it makes that feel like a shitty place. You go a bit further out, no one's harassing you for drugs. You're like, this is nice.
Yes.
And so the reason people, it's a cycle because people went there and they realized they could make money selling drugs to Westerners. And then that just becomes this whole cycle.
Absolutely.
Also, I think it's fair to say that obviously it depends. There's a million different drugs, not a million, but if you look at like the five most commonly used drugs, are any of those drugs going to be better there or wherever you are? Can you guarantee they're going to be safe? I think it's just a slippery slope. And also, if you are, I think we were talking about another episode where people are only going to smoke weed or like always trying to find weed, that detracts from you actually being there. So much of your day, so much energy is spent towards where can I find weed so I can get high versus I'm in this place, I'm trying to soak in, meet a local, go take in some sights, eat
and
good food.
Weed happens to show up, all right.
Yeah, I think that's the thing is... the best drug stories you can have on the road are the ones that where it presents itself, not when you're like looking for it. I think that's probably, you could say that about drugs. You could say that about food. You could say that about people. You could say that about women or the opposite sex, whatever you're into. That's probably just a golden rule.
Yeah,
the best stuff
yeah.
happens when you're not looking for it.
I think you ticked like all three boxes in quick succession. Well done.
Maybe we need to start recording at 420 every day, more later.
My big story on this is I lived in Medellin, Colombia in 2009, and this was before the big crush of Western tourists actually landed in Colombia and thought it was a safe space to tour, to visit, to enjoy. And I would go to this park, it's called Parque Lleras, and it was 90-95% Colombian. And it was just, oh, Nate.
Amazing.
If I could freeze a place in time. It was just such a great space to be in, full of just positive energy, people dancing, obviously partying, drinking, having fun. But man, I felt like I'd hit the backpacking tour. Well, I was there volunteering for a couple months, but I just like I'd hit the lottery.
Mm-hmm.
I'd go to nightclubs and there'd be like, you know, a couple handfuls of gringos that were backpacking and coming through as the country started opening up a little more. And bouncers and stuff would look at you and be like, nah, like you're not coming in because you're white, because you're foreigners. Like we don't want you in here. You guys are going to be acting a fool or doing drugs or getting in fights or whatever. I had to like show up to this nightclub every weekend for like a month. And finally talk my way into this guy. And so by the end of it, he finally let me in and be like, all right, you're the one gringo that's allowed in here, or you can bring a friend or two, but then that's it. I went back to that place 7 years later and it had completely changed.
Just full of drugs.
It was just full of catering to Westerners, Westerners everywhere, strung out people selling drugs, strung out people on drugs, locals and tourists alike, 60-year-old women, 15-year-old boys and girls. It just made me sick to my stomach. And the Colombians I knew told me they don't go there anymore.
Yeah.
And I was like, this place was like in the middle of like a jungle. There were woods and trees everywhere. There was just like music spilling out of every doorway, like beautiful Colombians strolling around, going for dinner, eating ice cream, partying. It was just, it was a place in time. And now it's fucking shit. And of course, you know, the numbers of Americans getting in trouble, getting arrested, ODing, dying, all this shit has spiked. And it's not the place that I love. Yeah, it makes me sick to my stomach thinking about it. So that's just, I was thinking about that today. And I've had this kind of, you know, in my mind for a while. So I just wanted to share that story. I do think there are exceptions, though.
Yeah.
What are places where you can leave and just visit and go and just be like, absolutely anything's on the table. I was thinking places like Vegas. If you move to Vegas and want to live anywhere near the Strip, you know, you got to know what you're getting into at this point. And
yeah,
I feel like Vegas for the longest time
as well.
If you want to live in the French Quarter or anywhere near the French Quarter, I mean, come on now. It's been rip-roaring debauchery for decades. Like, okay. Ibiza, if we're going abroad, yeah, I'll put that on the table.
I think I also any city with a pulse in disposable income, people just kind of fall into that as well. People in New York and London. And
I mean, if locals and stuff are doing it, then man, it gets really slippery there. But I still don't think that you as a tourist should be driving it in any way, really, and try to resist it as much as possible. I just think that's the best case scenario. What's another solution if it's not an exception? Just bring your own edibles. Pack your own vape. You know what I mean? Just don't buy it there, because that's the thing, as you alluded to, your first point, you nailed it, right? You hit it out of the park. It just creates this cycle. You're creating the economy, right? That then just starts to
create demand,
itself.
Which then has to force supply.
Absolutely. And so then that's how, you get 10-year-olds selling dime bags on the corner. So just with our technology today, I have friends who fly with that shit all the time.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's smart necessarily, but you can conceal
it. Federally illegal, but...
Yeah, but nobody really cares if you're packing a couple carts, you know what I mean? Weed carts, and just slipping them into the suitcase and flying to fucking
I knew someone who traveled with Trail Mix, and they opened it up. There was chocolate edibles in the Trail Mix. The
Genius.
TSA woman looked inside the box, the thing, and was like, yeah, all good. So it's
genius.
Like... Yeah.
Or I think the other solution is, if you can get it delivered to your domicile... to your hotel, wherever you live. Like if you're posted up in London and there's a service you can get it delivered somewhere, all right, I'm gonna let that slide.
Okay.
Happy 420. Happy 420. All right, Nate, get us off drugs and
awesome.
Get on some other
good,
kind of
I'm looking for good, clean, sober, wild fun. awesome. My travel take this week, Brad, is have Craigslist dictate your next trip. And I know this sounds like a bit of a wild, obscure concept, but I've been playing it a bit safe this season with my takes. And I went with fucking plastic water bottles last week. I need to kind of come in here with a curveball. I need to come in
here. Where's zany Nate at?
Yeah, where's that zany Gemini Natey boy? Anyways, This idea stemmed from summer 2015. I was in Fort Collins, and I was going to, I had one more year in D.C., and I was looking for ways to get back to D.C., didn't know if my sister was going to leave her car or if we had to drive it. I went on Craigslist, and I went on the rideshare tab, and I saw that it was like, hey, I'm looking for someone to drive my Honda Odyssey from Denver to Philadelphia. Can anyone do it? We'll pay for gas. I instantly was like, this is how I'm going to get back to D.C., because I said, I mean, it's just like all these things put into one. Free travel, bang. You know, like the idea that you're like helping someone out, and then the idea that there's like some sort of like cosmic, kismic connection with, you know, some random stranger on the internet. Why I'm saying this now is flights are exorbitant. And then you start looking at road trips, and A, you might have to go, you know, a long way to get something new. And B, gas isn't cheap either. So I'm trying, this hack is basically, how can you subsidize your gas costs? And it starts with Craigslist. So as I said, the rideshare tab is on Craigslist is where you're going to find this. Here's a few listings I saw, I'll kind of summarize them. Looking for someone to drive a car from Fort Collins to Boston. My daughter got a job in Boston, but her Honda CR-V is still here in Fort Collins. Looking for a responsible driver or two to drive the car to Boston. No concrete plans yet. Just want to see if anyone's interested. Hey, pay for my gas. Let's do it.
Book it. Done.
Book it. Easy. You're driving the CRV and you get it. You're like, hey, I'll have the car there in 1 week. And then you just go kind of, you know, meander to do your thing. And you're using someone else's car. You get the gas. The other one I saw that I really liked was, help me get my Craigslist purchase to Jackson, Wyoming. I purchased a guide tent that totals 200 pounds and I need someone to drive it up here. Basically, that's kind of the extent of the post. But I was like, hey, pay for my gas on the way up there. And I've got it there next week. So I like this idea because it kind of, it is a bit flexible, but you're kind of letting the universe and the internet and Craigslist steer you in a really cool direction that you like, you know, if you're saying, hey, I'm going to leave next Friday, between now and then you just look on Craigslist in like the three surrounding cities and bang, something might happen. And I like that idea of having someone else, something else dictate, but also you are in control. So what do you think, Brad? Are you stepping up to the plate on this one?
I feel like if I was in like a Mad Men room or whatever, and this was like a marketing pitch, and I'd be like, that's it. That is fucking out of the box. That is creative. That is, give this man a job. Whose guy is this? Promote him. It's one of the best takes of the season, I feel like. It's just straight heat. That's the travel takes that I brought you on for, Nate.
Yeah, yeah. I've been holding up my end of the bargain.
Man, it's wild. It's, you know, it takes a certain person to execute something like this. But to your point, you know, just roll the dice. Maybe if you got a free weekend or something, just, you know, click on there every now and then, get a little surf. I wonder what's on the Facebook marketplace. I wonder if that's like another alternate universe of like weird asks and
caters a bit more to old white men, you know, something like that where you're like, I think the other thing I wanted to mention is they actually offer rides too. They're like, hey, I'm driving from here to here. And I know that this is just a bit further. This is one step further. I'm driving from here to here and throw in for gas. We'll make the drive or something like that. So I think it's also an out of the box way. The way I want to pitch this as is controlled hitchhiking.
Yes.
You want to hitchhike, but you're like, there's so many variables that you can't control. This is a way you can like screen beforehand. You could say, this is my safety system. You let the person driving you say, look it, I'm checking in with this person every single time. If I don't check in, I'm calling the cops. So no funny business. And then you can weed out any weirdos, look at them on Facebook. You're like, this person's completely normal. And then it's like, you still have the same exhilarating experience as hitchhiking, but you have the safety behind you. So I'm always trying to think
you've
about
got a license.
Like,
you've got a license plate.
Hey, what's your license plate number? What's your social?
You've got a name.
You
know who's nailed this? And I told you this earlier. Europeans have nailed this. And it's called Blah Blah Car. And it's basically controlled hitchhiking for the next generation. And they've made it into a whole economic system where from Spain to France to Germany, you can go on an app and people can book in to someone's car that's going from Madrid to Bilbao, for example. And they make up their own rates. It's like 10 to 20 euros. Don't know if they're doing to speak to your like fear of, I don't know, kidnapping or something. I don't know if they do safety or background checks, but it's when I first heard about this about 5-6 years ago, I go, now that is a fucking idea. I don't think Americans are ready for that yet.
No, definitely
not. We're too weird about getting in strangers' cars. or sharing our car with anybody. I know they do that in DC. People do it like the slug lines and shit, where people will just hop in from, you know, Fairfax and hop in some stranger's car and take a ride down to the district. But
interesting.
I think it's kind of next level shit. Go ahead.
There's like certain areas that I think hitchhiking in this would work in.
The West, for sure.
I think like the Pacific Northwest, it just feels a bit more, I don't know. I feel like when you have a culture that is a bit more bought into it, but if it's like, if you told me, Nate, you're going to hitchhike through Kansas, I go, I do not want to get in a car with anyone in this neck of the woods, you know? Nothing against Kansas. I'm just trying to say like, you, culturally, you're like, I don't know. Who's going to be picking me up? I don't know. Does that make sense?
When I say the word vagabond, I think like Oregon.
Yeah, yeah.
When I picture somebody like jumping on a train and like sneaking in the back of it, I feel like their destination is Oregon or California. Yeah. So I feel like they're ready for this. I think the best thing here though is you couple that social good. I'm going to, you know, I'll help you out. I'll run your car.
Yeah.
Then you get a road trip out of it as well. And the gas paid for it. That's like, I don't need anything else. Can help me help you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's a win-win for everybody.
Yeah, you're like, don't throw too much of a bargain. Hey, I'll drive your car. You pay for the gas, which transporting the car would be like $1,500. They're probably going to pay $300, $400 gas. You get a free car for a week.
Yeah.
Bang.
As long as I can smoke weed or smoke my vape, you know, take a couple edibles and they're cool with that, then we're good.
You're like,
go.
Hey, actually, I've only gotten in 16 or 17 accidents, but I'm a good driver. Yeah.
I got a DUI, but it was just weed, man. Just driving under the influence. It was just
don't
weed.
Actually have my license, but it's all good. I usually smoke a little crack to stay awake. All right, too far. Well, what are we getting into next?
Man, we're going to bring a guest onto the pod and get the homie Rami in here. So
let's jump into it.
Let's jump into it. All right, and joining us all the way from Cairo today is Rami Abu Eloyoun. Rami is a friend. He's the creator of the music for this podcast, and he's my favorite DJ.
DJ Amin Ra.
Rami was raised in Cyprus until his family moved to Northern Virginia when he was 16, upon which he attended the outstanding academic institution of Chantilly High School. Sorry, I just had to humble brag that. Rami threw himself into the DC music scene after high school before properly refining his technique in Phoenix for 5 years. He returned to DC, digging deeper into music and starting the collective, The Beaten Path. When the pandemic struck, Rami made his leap to Egypt and hasn't looked back. As he reestablishes himself with familial and cultural roots, he launches his travel company as well. So, Nate, let's give him a warm welcome.
Wow.
Rami, what's up, brother?
What's
How
going,
are
guys?
You? What's the weather like in Cairo?
We just evaded a sandstorm and it was like 40 plus degrees Celsius, but now it's a cool 25. So,
See, Nate, that's why I ask these questions. Sandstorm? That sounds fucking awesome.
I love talking a bit of weather, but it's not every day we get a sandstorm in the mix here. Definitely not in the Rocky region.
No, sir. It's crazy. It covers up the entire country, man. It's just haze everywhere.
I was about to say, what does that actually look like in city, like in Cairo? Does the visibility just drop to like, can you drive a car and fucking not see anything?
You can drive, but if you go on like a rooftop of a building, you won't really see that far. I mean, depending on the severity of it. But I'll give you a funny example. I had some travelers here last August and they were like, Rami, why are all the buildings painted the same color? And I was like, that's not paint. That's dirt. That's dirt from the sandstorms and that's dirt from everything else. So, yeah, it depends. Sometimes it's really bad. Sometimes it's good.
I'm intrigued. Can you make a sandstorm happen when I come to Egypt to visit you?
I will do my best. I will consult with the gods and make sure that happens.
Appreciate it. All right, we're going to jump right in here, Rami. And I want to follow in the mold of our last interview. We want to start with a vibe check in Egypt. I'm fascinated by this idea about how the world emerges from the last 2 years. So what are the good people of Egypt up to post-pandemic? What's the sense across the country? And how you feeling, bruh?
Personally, I'm feeling good. Right now, it's Ramadan. So the entire country is fasting.
Hungry?
Angry, hungry, agitated, and grumpy. Everyone's fasting from morning, you know, sunrise to sunset. People driving like crazy. Like, Egypt's already really bad when it comes to driving, but when you're hungry and agitated and your coffee and your cigarettes have been taken away, it makes it even worse. Things are good here, man. Things are starting to pick back up. Egypt never really shut down for more than 3 months. So because a lot of the economy here is like daily workers. So it's good. It's good. It's just...
You were saying that the country as a whole was kind of like, shut down? No. Like, if you want to shut down, we're just going to straight up revolt and take to the streets. They weren't having it.
No, they weren't. It lasted 3 months. Then after that, it was just like, okay, we need to get out of here. But the vibe in Egypt right now is not the most pleasant because the currency just got devalued. What that means is... You know, they have loans from the IMF and stuff like that. So before, the dollar used to be 15 pounds. Now it's 18 and a half pounds. So overnight, people woke up and were like, where did our money go? You know, so inflation is definitely up. There's long queues for imports. Actually, the government just banned like 800 companies from importing things because they're like, okay, if these things are made in Egypt, why are we sending our dollars abroad? Stuff from like Nestle, you know, just... basic commodities and basic goods. So
this seems to be like a global trend. Last week, I don't know if you caught the interview, Rami, we interviewed somebody down in Buenos Aires and they were just talking about inflation and economic instability. Well, granted, that's like Argentinians' hallmark. That's what they do. Destable economy is kind of where they live. But in the US, we're also feeling it as well as far as inflation and things are concerned. So. Well, let's switch it up. I want to start digging into Egypt itself, the experience there and travel. And let's just go ahead and address the elephant in the bazaar right off the jump, shall we? If we're being honest, Egypt was last in America's and the world's collective consciousness about 10 years ago.
Yes.
It was the Arab Spring. There was a revolution, the first democratically elected president, and then there was a coup d'etat. I think a lot of us saw all this on CNN. It was on newspapers. Those are some big history-altering moments. We're looking at things through the travel lens today. I know the country took a massive hit to its tourist sector as stability and safety was a concern. But what does all that look like today?
Well, first and foremost, Egypt, I think, is one of the safest places you can possibly go to. I have left my wallet many a times in restaurants and cars and cabs and places, and people always like, hey, you left your stuff behind, or I'll go back the next day, it'll still be there. A lot of it is, Egypt is kind of situated in a very like geographically strenuous position because you have Israel and Palestine to the right, you've got Libya to the left, you've got Sudan to the south. So there's kind of like tumultuation all around us, but in Egypt itself, it's extremely safe. You can walk the streets at 3 a.m. You know, you're not going to be harassed. And, you know, they've always been accustomed to dealing with tourists. You know, tourism is a big part of the economy, probably like 15% of the economy. So there's definitely action that's happening. I wouldn't say Egypt is any less safe than New York or D.C. or San Francisco or any of these places. Actually, on the contrary, I would say those places are much more dangerous. We don't have violent crimes here. We don't have gun violence here. We don't have... those things just don't happen, you know? For instance, if you have a flat tire on the road, like half the country will stop and try to help you, especially if you're a woman and you just wave your hand, like everyone will come and try to help you out. So unfortunately the media, you know, portrays the Middle East and Egypt and then these other countries as not so stable places. But once you actually get the pulse of the country and meet the people, you're going to feel super safe. And the worst thing that's going to happen to you is someone's going to harass you to try to buy something. You know what I mean? But apart from that.
Oh, the touts. And they're everywhere.
Yes, yes.
You walk down Canal Street in New York and you're going to get it too.
Exactly.
There was instability in the region, Egypt specifically. But you feel like the dust has been settled, correct? and you feel like tourist sector and economy is back and up and running full steam, arms open wide, ready for to get down to business and have people come, right, visit?
Yes, since July of 2020. Once the airports opened back up, Egypt was one of the very few countries that didn't require, there weren't a lot of COVID restrictions. You just have to have a negative PCR test to come. So a lot of people started traveling to Egypt and still do. Because, yeah, there's not the, you don't need a vaccine. You don't need all the crazy things that some other places do. So, and it's affordable. It's close by to Europe. You know, it's close by to Asia. It's kind of in the middle of everything. So flights.
What's that flight from the U.S.? You've made it a bunch of times.
Egypt Air. I am going to shout out Egypt Air on this podcast. Is there are 7 daily flights from New York to, not 7 daily, 7 weekly flights from New York to Cairo direct. And then from DC to Cairo, there's 3 a week, and it's 11 hours, which is like basically a long bus ride here in Egypt to go from one place to another. So yeah, I'll sit back on my comfy chair and get some food served and watch the latest Marvel movies.
All right. Let's keep it moving. This is a big year for Egyptian history in the country. One, it marks the 100th anniversary of the discovery of King Tut's tomb. Two, it appears the long-awaited Grand Egyptian Museum is set to open in what will be the largest archaeological museum in the world. Fun fact for you, Nate. Rami, you've led tours to Giza, where the museum is located. Have you seen it? And can you sense that there's a buzz in the air about it?
Yes, you can see it actually from the pyramids. It's this monumentous billion-dollar structure that basically, yeah, just shits on any other museum probably in this region or the world. I'm not going to even lie.
Our architecture, I looked at it, it really gets my rocks off. And it's really, yeah, I looked at the location. It's like right next to it, which seems like it's a 1-2 punch for tourists.
They said you can have sweeping views of the pyramids while you're inside there, air conditioned and everything.
Absolutely. And the cool thing is they've been doing, like as they relocate items from the different parts of the world, different parts of Egypt, they're doing these ceremonies where, I don't know if you guys caught it, it was about last summer, they just had these massive parades with everybody dressed in costume and the trucks looking like sailboats. And so they're definitely publicizing the crap out of it to make it as popular as possible. And they even just recently relocated. There's a ship that was by the pyramids, and they like shut down the city, not the city, but the part of the area, and kind of moved it in like 13 hours, you know, inch by inch. So there's definitely a lot of hype around it. I'm excited to go see it because the old Cairo Museum is something that was built in the 1800s. It smells like...
It looks
dusty.
Yeah, it just smells like, you know, ancient shit. It doesn't smell good.
Got that old world funk on it.
You want that old world looks, but new world funk. Is that what you're trying to say, Preston?
Yes, you do need the word new world funk. Yes.
All right, well, that said... I feel like there's a ton of information out there about that and all the other big blockbuster tourist sites. You were pretty adamant that Egypt is much more than temples and pyramids. So what else is out there then, Rami?
Man, I'm so happy you asked that question, Brad, you know, because that's a misconception. So there's a lot to see in Egypt. First and foremost, you know, we're located on the Red Sea. So diving here is a top 3 destination in the world. There's a place called Dahab where divers come from all over the world, free divers and scuba divers. Honestly speaking, I've been to many oceans and seas in the world, and I don't think anything comes close to the Red Sea. Just the energy of it, the clarity of it, the salinity of it, it's very, very salty. So it's like effortless kind of the swim. And then on the other side of Egypt, you have Siwa, which is a water oasis in the middle of the desert that goes back to, you know, Cleopatra and Alexander the Great. And it's basically just a bunch of palm trees. And if you dig 10 meters into the ground, you get fresh water, which is pretty insane. So it's lush, it's green, but also has, you know, healing elements of like salt lake crystals where people go. And that's where you see all those cool pictures of people in like these salt baths kind of swimming. There's a lot of nature in Egypt. There's a lot of culture in Egypt. There's over 200 tribes. There's over 5 languages that are spoken here in Egypt. And this is actually interesting because Egyptians don't know this. You know what I mean? Like Egyptians don't realize that there's over 5 languages. There's over 200 tribes. So I can't blame other people for thinking, okay, we only come here for the pyramids and the tombs. It's a diverse place. It's, you know, it's thousands of years old. And so there's layers upon layers upon layers, from architecture to food to culture to art. You know, everybody's colonized Egypt. Everyone's had a piece of Egypt. So those things are very evident, you know, walking down the street in Cairo and downtown, from the Parisian architect to the Turkish coffee that's brewing somewhere. There's just so much to cover. But of course, people come here to see the ancient Egyptian history, which is beautiful in itself.
Do you think people, if you wanted to go have a good like beach vacation holiday parlay, obviously seeing the must-sees with actually going to, you know, things besides the oasis and the beach, do you feel like that there's plenty of tourism infrastructure for those kind of places, like resorts and beaches and whatnot?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's actually, I would say, maybe like 90% of Egypt's travel economy. It's particularly along the Red Sea. There's a place called Ghadda'a, Sharm el Sheikh, Dahab. All those places are resort heavy, 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 heavy resort places. So the largest populace would be Russians and Eastern Europeans, and then Europeans themselves, because you can fly straight into Sharm el Sheikh, which is that major airport there. Mm. So if you want to just come and seclude yourself and just sit on a beach somewhere and be catered to with meals and drinks, that's where you go, definitely. And it's cheap, and it's, you know, five-star hotels, Meridian, Marriott, Hilton. They're notable places. And there's actually one place called El Guna, and that's kind of where, like, the richest of the rich Egyptians go to party and to go spend time there. It looks like Venice, but it's in Egypt.
Sounds
so there's definitely, you can go do the hustle bustle and go see the pyramids and tombs and temples and then spend about 5 days at a resort, you know, just chilling, basically.
Besides Cairo and that city that you just mentioned looked like Venice, are there any like must-see cities or kind of like ones that you wouldn't see coming? Or like, I don't know, Brad always talks about cultural custodians. I'm thinking like, are there cities that are kind of like must-sees outside of those two that you just mentioned?
100%. So the temples are mostly, the largest city with all the temples is Luxor, which is in the south of Egypt. That's where the Valley of the Kings is, the Valley of the Queens, Karnak Temple, Luxor Temple. And then there's Aswan, which is a couple of hours south of Egypt. And that's traditionally where Nubia is, which is like Black Egypt, Black Africa. They have their own languages. They have their own sets of cultures and super vibrant and colorful. But there's also temples and stuff there. Another city would be Alexandria. That place is also just as ancient as Cairo. And it's a very different vibe because it's by the beach, so you have like more of like a port side city. Then you have smaller towns like Fayoum, which is known for its like arts and crafts. That's where all the rugs and the pottery and the craftsmanship really flourishes in the place like Fayoum. Egypt has a population of 105 million. About 30 million of it is in Cairo, which makes it one of the largest cities in Africa. But the rest of Egypt is in the world too. Yeah, definitely. I think Tokyo is a little bit bigger than that. Lagos might be a little bit bigger than that. But there's definitely much to see and much to just expose yourself to. Cairo is just the hub where you fly in, and it's where the pyramids are and Giza is. But what people tend to do is they fly into Cairo and then they'll do like a cruise down the Nile from Luxor to Aswan, because then you can hit up all the different sites, all the different temples and stop. And then people end up leaving. Personally, with my tours, I like to do Cairo, Luxor, or Aswan, and then Dahab, which is kind of where I live and reside, which is a small, quaint beach town on the Red Sea. As I mentioned earlier, a lot of people come there for scuba diving, free diving. It's just a very popular tourist attraction place.
Well, let's stay there with what you're doing. You've been working these last 2 years to build a bridge for tourists from the U.S. to come experience your motherland.
Yes.
Through personally guided tour groups with your outfit called Travel with Amin Ra. You're yes. particularly motivated to work with people of color, bringing that community to Egypt, Africa, the cradle of civilization. What's that experience been like, and what's the inspiration behind it for you?
I'll start with inspiration. I was doing a lot of research and looking. I'm sure you guys know, but Black travel is up in numbers, and people mm-hmm. are traveling and trying to, you know, rediscover more about their heritage and ancestry. So, you know, places like Senegal, Nigeria, Ghana, Kenya, all those places were being offered, but I really didn't find anybody offering Egypt. So I reached out to a friend of mine. Her name is Evita, and she has a group called Travel No Madness. And I asked her, I was like, hey, you know, why aren't you guys offering Egypt? And she's like, well, we just don't know anybody there. We don't have the resources, you know. And anytime you talk to somebody and tell them that you're from Egypt, their eyes light up and they just get all in awe and just like, oh my God, I want to go, but I'm scared to go. So I really found that I think I would be the best medium to facilitate and host that. I was in DC and I actually left DC. I actually left before the pandemic broke out. Three events happened to me in 1 week where it was like, all right, it's time to go, man. It's time to go. And then 2 weeks later, after I got here, COVID broke out. That's why I really thought that it's important to hold space for those people coming here as an Egyptian, knowing the language, knowing the culture, but also knowing America and having lived in America for 20 years. I don't think there's somebody, there's plenty of Egyptian Americans, but you know, I don't really think that there's anybody
else. You're the only one.
You're built a little different.
You're the only one I know.
I am built a little bit. I'm the only 6'5" Egyptian American. Let's put it that way.
You're the only one in my heart too, Rami.
Oh, that's so sweet, Brad. I'm so thankful for you.
You mentioned that this was also, there was something bigger and deeper underlying all this, right? Something maybe a little more empowering about hosting this community. You want to speak to that as we start?
Absolutely. For me, it was just as much to reconnect with my ancestry and roots, but for a lot of people coming to Egypt and coming to Africa in particular, seeing these epic monuments and temples and tombs, and then looking at the hieroglyphs on the wall and seeing black or brown people being depicted on the wall, that is a source of inspiration. That is a source of just pride. You know what I mean? Particularly for people that have had their ancestry taken away from them. So being able to come to Egypt and see, okay, you know, our ancestors accomplished things that we still can't explain today. You know what I mean? Through modern history and modern medicine and modern architecture, a lot of it just blows people's minds. So, and then once the people actually get here and experience it, I just see a transformation in them. They're less weary of the outside world. They're less skeptical. They're much more just a sense of gratitude and a sense of like appreciation. And most importantly, it's just inspirational. And it really fills them with pride and makes them believe in anything, you know?
Do you feel like this experience draws you closer to your ancestry and your roots? Is it kind of a win-win for everybody, where the more you get to show people, the more you show yourself and learn?
Absolutely. For me, the thing that I can take away the most so far is my language has improved 100-fold. My Arabic wasn't the greatest before I came. It was conversational, but now it's like, you know, I can go in depth. So that's really like been something that's very important for me. But also, yeah, just a big part of the reason why I left America was because my concept of America before going there was this American dream and everything is cool and everyone's safe and equal. And then once I got there, my experience was just like, I actually moved to America a month before 9/11. So, you know, I got slapped across the face pretty quickly.
It's a tough time to move there for sure.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I just kind of felt like, you know, the American dream has changed and it's not for everybody. You know, so for me, coming back here and reconnecting with my roots has really, A, given me a peace of mind. It's taken me out of this, you know, capitalistic society where all we're doing is working. And for me here, the quality of life far exceeds America, believe it or not. I'm not making as much money as I used to, but, you know, the fruit and veggie shop is available 24 hours a day and I can just walk there and get a whole bunch of groceries for less than $20 to last me, you know, 2 weeks. So that's just small things that add up that, you know, you probably spend $20 on a mango at Whole Foods right now. I don't even know what a price is in America. So those things are important to me.
Looking forward, I know, you know, you've really worked with this and you've gotten it off the ground. Do you see any changes, to your company here, and or how you're going to do things or how you want to grow or expand?
Yeah, absolutely. So right now it's only been word of mouth, the way I've been communicating with people and referrals. But I would love to start moving towards like quarterly retreats or quarterly packages where, okay, you know, at the end of each month is the offering, and then people can sign up for it that way, versus most of it has been like, hey, we want to come to Egypt. What's a good time to come? I would like to kind of flip the script a little bit and be a little bit more concise in my offering. And then phase three really is the arts and culture part. For me, I really want to be this bridge between America and Egypt. I call myself a cultural attaché. I know that's not really a term that's usually used, but it usually refers to somebody working at an embassy that likes to bring cultural events together. So I really see myself as this bridge where I can host artist retreats. I would love to host artist retreats here in Egypt, more holistic retreats where we can infuse medicine, traditional medicine. Those are the things that I would definitely love to move forward to. What's really important to me is grow the local economy. So yes, the money comes to me, but also, you know, I'm paying out the drivers, I'm paying out the guides, I'm paying out the Airbnbs. So I think, yeah, moving forward in 2022, 2023, you're probably going to see more offerings from me, and they're going to be catered towards, of course, you'll have the traditional Egyptian stuff, but then you'll have, you know, a scuba dive retreat, a seaweed retreat where we go and bury ourselves in the sand, elements like that, where it's not just come see the pyramids and go to the temples. Like, I would really like to incorporate more of the culture and more of the things that you don't traditionally see into
Egypt. Bit of a deeper dive, yeah.
All right, Rami, well, we're going to get you out of here on this, well, for the most part, and then I got something I'm going to spring on you at the end, but you're going to find out.
You're going
to learn today. So yeah, we're going to get you out of here on this. This is our last interview segment. It's our like rapid fire 10 questions, stream of consciousness answers, quick hits. Basically, the first thing that comes to your mind, just blurt it out. And we're going to keep it moving. If there's something to pick at and sit with, we'll kind of dig a little more, but just first thing that comes to your mind, quick answers.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Let me take a sip of water first real quick. So
it's dry over there, guys.
All right. First question, Rami, first meal when you're back in the States.
A vegan meal, usually Thai or pho or ramen. Anything of those three, definitely.
Rami, travel book or movie that influenced you most?
Travel book or movie that influenced me most. Can we pass on that one? I don't think I can think of that.
Okay.
Rami, what's your guilty pleasure in Egypt?
Eating mangoes on the beach.
Quick. Mangoes on the beach. Fucking, that's my guilty pleasure anywhere.
Even if they're $20 at Whole Foods.
Even if they're $20 yes. Whole Foods, man. Even better, that the guiltier.
All right.
Go ahead, Nate.
Kill, marry, fuck these three cities: DC, Phoenix, Cairo.
What's the question again?
Kill, marry, fuck these three cities: DC, Phoenix, Cairo.
So you have to kill one, you have to marry one, and you have to fuck the other.
I'd definitely fuck DC. I'd probably marry Phoenix, and then the last option for Cairo.
Bro, that's harsh, dog.
What's the last option? I don't remember. Kill. Fuck, or marry?
Kill.
Oh, yeah, definitely kill. Definitely kill Cairo, because it's a fucking vicious-ass city.
Yeah.
It's loud. Yeah. Marry Phoenix, and then I'll fuck DC.
That's a big up to Phoenix. All right, Rami, what's one thing about Egyptian culture that you'll take with you wherever you go in life?
The sense of community. Here, everyone's kind of, there's just, yeah, a big sense of community where you can just talk to anybody and they'll really be open to you and help you out. And they're generally good people. And they're just generally good people.
Best country outside of Egypt in that region?
Lebanon, for the food and for the beauty of the nature, the mountains, and it's just a beautiful country, man. It's absolutely a beautiful country.
Beautiful people as well.
Yes, that too.
Lebanon, absolute banger. Season two.
Banger.
In a pickup soccer game, Rami, you get the first pick. Are you taking Mohamed Salah or Lionel Messi?
Messi's too old. Salah's in his prime, so I'm taking Salah right now.
All right.
Good call. If you're going to stay at any one of these three, which one would it be? Hostel, hotel, Airbnb?
Airbnb, because I can come and go as I please, and there's a sense of privacy that you don't get in any other places.
I concur.
Good call.
Is that true in Egypt as well?
Yes.
Is the Airbnb legit?
Yeah, when I book my guests here, we always stay at Airbnbs.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Rami, favorite city in the world?
Ooh.
Say it now.
I wish I had more time to explore it, but Tokyo
nope,
so far.
Nope. Tokyo.
Tokyo.
If you, yeah. I swear to God, if you said Phoenix, I would have been really peeved.
No, all right. That's no, fuck no.
Tokyo, another season three banger. Nate, you want to hit him with the last one?
Surefire best song to get drunk 23-year-olds popping off at Heist or any nightclub, really.
Kelly Clarkson, Since You've Been Gone.
Oh, nice call.
Oh, wow. All right. So I didn't tell you this, but we're going to bring you into the end of our podcast travel segment, banger, off-trail destination craziness.
Welcome, Rami.
Welcome.
This season, we've basically been going for straight surefire success, straight flames. The Mr. Brightside at 2 a.m. That's probably my call it for drunk 23-year-olds at Heist. So, Brad, where are we going to this week?
Pass the hookah, Nate. Pass the hookah, Rami. We're staying in Egypt. We're here. This is the first ever host-guest destination collab.
What?
Let's get into it. Mind's blown. You have no idea, Rami. There's going to be like reggae DJ horns going off all over in the segment. Nate, what are you stoked on seeing in Egypt?
Bangers. Ba-ba-ba-bum. Rami, I grew up in Phoenix, so I have been constantly seeking for things older than what was built in the 50s and 60s. I joke that it's not very hard. You pretty much go anywhere and you can achieve that. But I went to school in D.C. and then it was like, wow, the 1700s, this is crazy. But I think you can't really get much older than Egypt. And I think the connection with things that are of such a different era really appeals to me. As you mentioned, there's way more than just the pyramids. And I think from a cultural aspect as well, I've never been to Africa. And specifically, you know, you kind of said there's a number of different sects of culture within Egypt that I think, you know, just seeing the kind of how they compare and contrast really appeals to me. I'm also a massive fan of Mo Salah. So I just, you know, why wouldn't why wouldn't I go tip the cap to the GOAT? I feel like it's not quite
GOAT.
Hasn't reached GOAT status, but I think
oh my god,
he's definitely up there, Brad.
Rami's a Liverpool fan, he's definitely up there in my ass. You're speaking his language, you're buttering up, Nate. So good job. I'll quickly throw out what's got me juice to get down to Egypt. For me, this is a trip about childhood and grade school. I feel like Egypt is like algebra. I spent so much time studying it and hearing about it in grade school, but I've never seen it as an adult. I want everything I read about in world history to come to life for me. The pharaohs, the tombs, the pyramids, camels, every single stereotype. And then once that happens, I want to dig into the experience of what Egypt is at the moment. Fall into the culture, get lost in Cairo, all that good stuff. So let's get going with Rami as our compass, or as you said, our cultural attaché.
Hey.
Nate and I have cherry-picked two places we want to go to. Rami's going to add his wisdom, and then maybe, if we're lucky, he'll serve up a certified banger at the end. So, Nate, what's the big thing you want to see in Egypt?
First of all, I want to make a comment on what you're saying there about the textbooks. I remember there was that textbook with the most Kevin Costner-looking motherfucker, Field of Dreams, in like the Pharaoh getup, and he probably is not the best representation, so important to note there.
A little too white?
Yeah, that's probably the biggest thing. You know, thinking about what I want to do and what gets me really jacked up, obviously I think there is the main things that you're talking about, the temples, the pyramids, and some of the archaeological sites. The film major in me is thinking about some of the ones that are not quite the A1s. When I went to Angkor Wat, the main site that you see on all the postcards and t-shirts wasn't my favorite. It was the one that was like kind of off to the side, covered in vines. You know, no one was in there. It felt like you were actually amongst it. And so I think what gets me excited, especially as I was talking about, you know, growing up in Phoenix, I wanted something older and older, and I want to be like by myself at sunrise in one of these kind of smaller, you know, B sites that just me and the oldness, if you will. And I want to get amongst that. And so maybe later you can give me a few tips on what that might look like. Brad, where do you want to go? What's getting you jacked up?
Real quick, Rami, what comes to mind when he says that? Is there anything that jumps off the page?
Siwa.
All right, well, don't say anything. Sure, that's where I'm going. I want to go to an oasis, like a there real life go. Oasis, surrounded
yeah,
by date palms and hot,
your dreams.
Hot springs. And I'm talking about Siwa. I dug into this place the last couple of days. It looks straight out of a Paulo Coelho novel.
Yeah, man.
The definitely. How do you pronounce it? The Shali Fortress.
Shali Fortress, yes.
Shali Fortress looks like it could have been in Indiana Jones. It's yes, just, it's absolutely. Like straight up time traveling. On top of that, it's the world's third largest dune field mm-hmm. is surrounded by it. So we're talking sandboarding. Then you have the Bedouin style dinners experiences and desert experiences out there. You have indigenous Berber culture. Yes. Is that?
They're called Amazigh. Their name of the tribe is Amazighi, and they speak a whole different language over there.
And then the last thing I saw was you can climb the Mountain of the Dead, which has tombs that date back to 600 BC. Rami.
Yes. Yes, that's actually the place where I was going to take you guys. There's a mountain in the middle of Siwa where there's some, supposedly Alexander the Great has a temple over there. It's very destroyed now, but yeah, just sitting on top of that mountain and looking in each direction and seeing nothing but palm trees and desert is one of the most exhilarating feelings. And then coming up on sunrise, I think just camera wise it's going to look amazing. But yeah, Siwa is a place that I would say that you guys should both definitely check out.
That's it. This portion of the podcast is done. It's Siwa, baby. It's
there we go.
Let's lock this in. We're doing Cairo as the jump off to Giza, the pyramids, the Grand Egyptian Museum. Maybe we'll jump over to Luxor, right, Rami?
Aswan.
We'll do
yes.
the Aswan stuff. Then me, you, and Nate, we're all just hitting the Siwa straight up, going back in time or time traveling. Maybe do a little sandboarding if my knees can hold up.
Yes.
And then what do you say we end up in your spot of all relaxation spots in Egypt, Dahab? And
yes, neck deep
and we do some... Yep, neck deep yes. in mangoes. Me, you, eating mangoes on the beach. We do a little scuba diving. What's the place there? The Blue something? The Blue Lagoon?
Blue Hole. The Blue Hole and the Blue Lagoon. Both exist.
Double blue. Nate loves some blue-ass water. What am I missing, Rami? I don't want to step on your toes here, but this is all the knowledge I got from you. I'm just trying to put it together in one digestible audio clip. Does that sound good?
All you're missing is some sunscreen for your white asses, and that's it.
Ooh, hey, Nate definitely needs that sunscreen. He's red. Well, you saw on the video.
I'm red, pale, I'm red from head
pale,
to toe.
Pasty redhead. I mean, he just gets burned quick. Anything we should bring outside of that? What do Americans need besides sunscreen in Egypt?
If you have any vitamins or supplements that you need. No, I mean, I think you guys are well-versed travelers. You could probably bring me some
What do you
some
want?
Herbs.
Can we bring you?
Some herbs. You can bring
some
me some herbs. Yes, in the form of a vaporizer, you know, but that's about it.
Happy 420, Ron.
Happy 420,
man. Happy 420. All right, you guys are good. Just make sure you come, you know, after the summer so you don't burn.
Yeah, real quick, what's the time? What's the best time as a local living there? What's the best time for us to come see you?
October through March, I would say, is the best time. For Siwa, particularly November or December are the best months.
Ooh, that's when I go. So let's get me
Boom, book it.
Get me excited. Bang. Banger.
All right, let's get out of here. Rami, I meant that you are my favorite DJ. And you owe me a new DJ mix too while we're at it. Now I got it
I'm
on.
I'm gonna send it to you guys right away. I got a couple.
I got it on audio now, so it's official. Nate, do you want to hit us with a classic DJ Amun-Ra?
DJ Amun-Ra. Is that pretty good?
Wow.
You can steal that if you want that. Yeah. I don't know. You can
just
steal both of those.
Don't sound so constipated next time.
Yeah, okay. I'm sunburned and constipated, but it was lovely to meet you.
All right, Rami. Meet you guys. No doubt. You the man, and I really appreciate your insights, and I wish you the best as always. Yeah, and I can't wait to come make this Egyptian dream happen. I can't wait to see the textbooks come alive. And
thank you, guys.
Really, just eat
it.
Mangoes with you and kick it on the beach sounds better than
that sounds any, wonderful. Any, can I shout out my socials before you guys?
Yes,
wrap up?
Please give us all the information where people can contact you, reach you, and see you and hear you.
Sounds good. You can reach me at at DJ AMENRA, DJ Amon Ra, and you'll find a link to my Travel with Amon Ra experience on there. Those are the best ways to contact me through Instagram. There's a webpage you can, a question sheet you can fill out, info sheet, but definitely DJ Amon Ra, you'll find all the ways to contact me.
All right, let's get out of here, boys. It's been a pleasure. This is The Road Provides.
Peace.
Deuces.